All right, last hour on a Tuesday. Let's kick it off as we do every Tuesday with Robin Washington from Husker Online. Robin, good afternoon. Hello.
What's going on?
Well, have you heard about Graham Mertz?
I have. Quite the development up in Madison.
COVID has hit home in the Big Ten, and now the 21-day protocol kicks in. This is probably not a great question, and we all do a little speculating here. But, you know, you have people you talk to, and especially the fellow Wisconsin site. Do you think Saturday's game is anywhere in jeopardy of being played, of not being played?
Yeah, I mean, we just don't know. Because usually when there's one positive, that means there's a chance that there are more. And, you know, it's kind of one of those deals where we're getting to the point now where it's literally a daily situation with the daily testing. You know, you're going to constantly have new information that comes up that will give you, you know, an idea one way or the other about where things stand. The fact that, you know, Wisconsin already has, you know, a high-profile guy, another quarterback that missed practice yesterday for undisclosed reasons. You know, it makes you wonder, and especially with how fine of a line the Big Ten has set for its teams to be allowed to play, you know, with these COVID protocols, it's something that's definitely worth monitoring right now. And I would hope that this thing was an isolated situation, and they're able to get it under control and stop any form of further spread. But you know, that's a lot of times easier said than done. So I'm holding out hope that the game will go on as planned and that these teams are able to get through this. But at the same time, it's always going to be kind of that dark cloud hovering over of just how quickly a game could potentially be canceled given the guidelines that are in place with the Big Ten.
So, you know, when the first line came out, it was anywhere from 9.5 to 10 on the side of Wisconsin. Do you think by the time we get to kickoff at 2:30 on Saturday, there's a chance that Nebraska could be favored in this game?
You know, I wouldn't rule it out. If nothing else, that line is going to shrink significantly. You know, I think that Wisconsin still, obviously, with you taking the historical aspect of it and the fact that, you know, their running game still is what it is and their defense still is what it is, I don't know if it's enough to sway it that much, but, you know, it could be, especially if the money starts pouring in on Nebraska and that line continues to adjust throughout the week. It would not surprise me. You know, especially if there were fans in the stands, I could definitely see it, because then you really kind of throw in that home field advantage of, you know, Halloween night against a third, maybe even fourth string quarterback. That's looking pretty good for Nebraska's favor. But right now, you know, I do think it's going to shift the line significantly, but I'm not sure yet if it's going to be enough to put Nebraska as the favorite just yet. But like I said, that could very easily change over the next couple of days.
So let's do this. Let's go back to Saturday. What was the biggest overreaction that you had or you've heard to that game on Saturday?
Overreaction. Well, I know that members of our website are very upset with the usage of the wide receivers, you know, particularly basically, what, nine targets to wide receivers, and six of them came to Wandale. You know, this is a group that had a lot of questions going into the season. And for that lack of usage and the total, you know, zero semblance of a downfield passing game, you know, I think that's probably been a big immediate reaction of concern as far as fans go. It sounds like, you know, listening to Matt Lubick today, that they're not as concerned, maybe, because, you know, they had deep passes dialed up. They just weren't getting completed or were disrupted by pressure or whatever it may be. So I think they feel that element will come in time with this offense. And a lot of it just had to do with the way Ohio State was playing them. They were playing deep and forcing Nebraska to earn every yard they got. You know, maybe that changes a little bit, especially if, you know, the ground game continues to improve and, you know, teams have to creep up a little bit more than Ohio State had to. So I guess that's probably something that has gotten a lot of traction from what I've seen from the fan base, that, you know, maybe isn't quite as big of a deal as somebody are making out to be just yet. Now, that if it happens again on Saturday, then maybe it's a different story. But it's one game, and you know, I think a lot of that had to do with what Ohio State was doing, just as much as it did with what Nebraska was doing.
Do you think Nebraska was surprised they had as much success with the McCaffrey-Martinez combo like they did? That maybe they were going to use it, Ohio State was going to adjust, and then the game plan would go back to some semblance of maybe what they wanted to do, but they rode the hot hand, that continued to work for them, and so they just stuck with it?
Yeah, maybe, but I also know that they were really confident in Luke McCaffrey, and they truly feel that he is one of their best 11 offensive players, and they had that script built in for a reason, because for one, he's a good player, and two, he can handle a lot. You know, he has the mind to be able to play multiple positions, including quarterback, that is pretty unique. So not only is he an extremely gifted athlete, but you can put a lot on his plate and do a lot of different things with him, and he's going to be able to handle it. So, you know, I think they had very high expectations of what his role was going to be on Saturday and what will continue to be as the season goes along. But certainly the fact that it had the success that it did against a team like Ohio State certainly only reinforces that belief that they have a pretty big X factor in Luke McCaffrey, especially if Adrian is able to continue to play well and develop down the road.
Hey, do you think the if you want the rock, you got to block? Do you think that's written in stone? Because it appears to be they stick to that. I mean, if you don't block, you're not playing, regardless of how good you are. Now I know they've they got some different characters that are in that wide receiver room, but that appears to be a non-discussion. If you can't block, you're not playing. Good or bad with that that stance?
Well, you know, I get it, because you know, for them to run the football effectively, especially their style of run, where you know they want to make plays at the next level and get to the edge and have those home run type of a run game. And you obviously you have to have receivers that can block, not only on the perimeter but downfield at the next level to spring those runs, to become huge gains. That being said, you know, we just talked about how Nebraska didn't throw the ball at all downfield, and yes, Ohio State was playing them that way, but you have to have receivers with the ability to stretch the field and, you know, give your offense that vertical passing game for this system to truly reach its full potential. And they can't expect to dink and dunk their way to beat much of anyone in the Big Ten. So I think at some point, you know, you got to maybe make some exceptions. And I know you don't want to get in a situation where when personnel comes out, it's obvious it's going to be a run or it's obvious it's going to be a pass. But, you know, if guys aren't going to be dynamic threats at wide receiver, that's going to hinder your passing game just as much as maybe those guys' blocking ability is going to improve your run game. So it's a fine line, but I would certainly like to see guys that, you know, if they aren't the best blockers, find ways to incorporate them. Get your best athletes and receivers, route runners on the field just because if you're not having that explosive element of a vertical passing game, then this offense is going to be kind of playing handcuffed going forward.
What do you think the discussion was like between the DBs and Travis Fisher after that game?
Well, it's, you know, I'm sure that they told him that some of those penalties and calls were inaccurate and others were justified, but I think they're going to continue to tell them that, you know, you have to be aggressive. Mm-hmm. So that's the style of play we want you to have as long as you're doing it the smart way. You know, it's kind of some bad breaks there, but I don't know how much you can change if you want to play the style of defensive football that Nebraska wants to play. That's, you know, forcing the issue a little bit, you know, not only hitting guys hard, but, you know, creating turnovers. You know, when receivers are worried about getting popped, suddenly, you know, maybe they're not making the same plays on football as they normally would, and, you know, they're going to be more mistake prone. So I think that kind of all falls in line with what Nebraska's identity wants to be on defense. That being said, you know, you can't have guys getting ejected for targeting. And so it's a difficult predicament to be in, but one that I think that, you know, you can't all of a sudden have your guys, you know, playing scared, not hitting anymore. Otherwise, you know, then you're really putting your defense at an extreme disadvantage, especially this type of defense that is so predicated on making big plays and being an attacking physical style.
Do you think And you know, this is, you hear more coaches now, and both the head coaches on Saturday talked about the veracity of the hits and whether they should be penalized like they are. Do you get any sense that everybody wants to keep everybody safe, but we know what's happened. Now guys go low. I mean, fortunately, Jack Stoll doesn't appear to be out for the year. Guys will say, hey, hit me in the head. Don't hit me low in the moneymaker with my legs. Do you think there could be a point with the discussion led by coaches that they protect the safety of the players, but they don't have the same punishment for every hit that happens to be targeting?
I mean, especially with the ability to review plays, seeing intent is a lot easier than maybe it was before. And I think that there has to be some objectivity from the official to where it's not just letter of the law, this is the penalty, this isn't. You know, I think there can be degrees of the penalty where, say the Deontay Williams play, mm-hmm. I think looking back at that, it's questionable that it was even targeting, and then let alone an ejection that's carrying over until the first half of the following week. That seems so excessive for a play like that, which you can see on replay wasn't nearly as bad as maybe it looked when you watched it live. And so I think giving officials the ability to kind of review those things, and then beyond that, maybe giving the conference the ability to review the second half suspension in cases where you are not having such a severe discipline for a play that arguably didn't warrant it. I think that's got to be in the conversation. And the Joel Klatt rant during the game, I think it was hard for anybody to really disagree with him, especially watching some of those flags that were being thrown and in some cases picked up against Kraft.
Hey, let's shift to basketball. What do you think happens with Nebraska's MTE? We saw the bubble in Orlando come apart. A lot of the discussion was about uniform testing. The Big Ten still hasn't, officially said anything. We don't have a conference schedule. We don't have, hey, you can play this many games. It's now less than a month from the start of the college basketball season. What do you think is going on with that?
Well, I know behind the scenes, the tournament is pretty much set up. Nebraska's ready to go. Maybe they're looking to add a couple more teams and maybe even another Power Six opponent with now the new crop of schools that are in search of trying to fill out their non-conference schedules with that ESPN deal falling through. But I know that Nebraska and Elevate Hoops, the third-party entity that's kind of running the show with this, they feel really good about their situation here. Nebraska has done an excellent job providing all the resources and lining everything up logistically to make this thing have a chance to be as successful as possible. Whereas that Orlando deal, they already had inadequate daily testing. That was one of the big reasons why Nebraska pulled out as early as they did, well before this thing shut down, because they kind of saw that, this thing looks like it's going to be more of a headache than it's worth, especially when we don't even have to leave our campus mm-hmm. and have, much more, capable and I guess adequate testing capabilities. And so that's why I think this tournament has a much better chance of going forward, especially with the fact that all the work is being done or is done behind the scenes. It's kind of more just a matter of semantics with the Big Ten finally giving the green light on what it's going to allow its schools to do. So I'm still more optimistic than not that this thing will be played, especially knowing just how far along they are and basically having everything set up and ready to go once the Big Ten gives the green light.
Hey, one final question. Last week we talked about Bryce McGowan's and where Nebraska might fit with Trey's brother. You've got Arizona that gets their notice of allegations, and they're severe. I mean, they have five, level one. Sean Miller is going to be very uncomfortable if he isn't already. But the day after that happens, they get one of the best prospects in the country says, I'm going to Arizona to play. LSU has got all kinds of things swirling around with Will Wade. And I noticed in a discussion on Rivals about where he might end up, LSU and Nebraska in this hypothetical is even money. These schools that have NCAA issues hanging over their head, they continue to recruit well. Why?
Well, you know, sometimes when all you're getting is slaps on the wrist, it's not much of a deterrent to really change your methods. And I mean, obviously Arizona, their allegations and, you know, penalties that are being laid down there speak for themselves. And, you know, LSU, Will Wade, he's got quite the track record and reputation for his method of recruiting. And so I think it's more of a direct reflection of the NCAA that their inaction on, you know, recruiting violations and, you know, that type of dirty recruiting stuff, that is really not doing anything to keep schools like that from, you know, operating as, you know, standard procedure. So until that changes, you know, I think schools are willing to sacrifice, you know, a postseason ban here and there, or whatever, if you are getting elite level NBA players year in, year out. You know, I guess it's until they start actually handing out some legitimate discipline and there's actually severe punishment, you know, being levied to these programs that cheat and everybody knows they cheat, then, you know, what's to stop anyone from continuing to go forward, especially when the consequences just aren't there?
God, that those three letters, the NBA is so huge in the recruiting game these days. Mm-hmm. If you've got a past history of sending guys to the association, regardless if you're going to March Madness or not, man, you are more than likely going to get those four stars and maybe once in a while a five star to show up on your doorstep.
Yeah, especially when they're only going to be there for 1 year.
Yep.
I mean, you know, who cares if there's probation? You know, you're only there for, you know, 6-7 months. You know, so that's why those schools are able to do what they do.
As always, Robin, I appreciate it. Great stuff by you and the boys this weekend, and I'm sure it'll be an interesting week leading up to Saturday.
Yeah, I think we're just getting started. Buckle up.
Thanks, Robin. That's Robin Washert from Husker Online. Been a busy news drop with COVID and injuries. Something to pay attention to, because this will come around in a couple of weeks. Penn State's 0-1. They got Ohio State on Saturday night. They could be staring at 0-2. They could be 1-2 when they come to Lincoln. Noah Cain is out for the remainder of the season. He is done. So they're out, their top two running backs at Penn State. I'm sure we'll have more on that as we get closer to that game in a couple of weeks. But this will be about COVID. And Graham Mertz is now officially out for Wisconsin. We'll wait to see if Chase Wolf, who is his backup, who was not at practice yesterday after testing positive for COVID, what his second test is. But I think Wisconsin's preparing Danny Vandenboom to be their starting quarterback. Hasn't played since 2018, redshirted in 17, didn't play last year, 6'5" from the state of Wisconsin. Take a quick break. Tom Chattel is about 10 minutes away on a Tuesday for Tom segment. We have lots to discuss when he joins us. Come back. You all have lots to discuss. We'll roll through the Equitable Bank inbox. We'll check some emails and try and get to the bottom of what's going on in Madison, but more importantly, how it affects Saturday's game in Lincoln. Shouldn't affect Nebraska. Shouldn't affect Nebraska at all.